Light our fire and protect us from the dark, blah, blah. Light our way and keep us toasty warm. The night is dark and full of terrors. Save us from the scary things and blah, blah, blah some more.
Welcome to Two Champs and a Chump, a Game of Thrones LCG podcast founded in 2010 by myself, Will Lentz, Brett Zeiler, and Greg Atkinson. Currently regularly hosted by myself, Brett, and Daryl Lloyd. Thanks go out to George R.R. Martin for the world we're all fans of, FFG for this amazing game, CardGameDB for our hosting, and Josh Woodward for the Creative Commons license music that you hear in this episode. This is Season 4.
I'm a Tyrion fan, what can I say?
He's the best.
He really almost is. More Jaime is, but, you know, Tyrion's pretty close.
Yeah.
I don't remember that quote.
Yeah, you know, I'm afraid this website may have stolen something from the TV show. It almost,
why.
Yeah, it almost sounds more like the Tyrion of the TV show, who's still pretty awesome. It is the A Song of Ice and Fire quote, Tumblr, I think is what they're called.
Okay.
So I would hope they're all from the books, but I can't place it. It doesn't give me a page number.
Interesting. I always wondered where you pulled those from.
They're not all from here. I pull them from a lot of places, and sometimes I'll, you know, just sit down and flip open Dance with Dragons or, you know, what have you, and just start flipping through random pages looking for something that'll jump out at me. I try not to just always do them from the same place.
I can't imagine Martin sitting down and writing blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, that does seem kind of odd. I think he would want something a little more descriptive. But oh well. So welcome, everybody, to the last Two Champs and a Chump of 2013. Yeah.
You scared me there for a second.
Yeah. Was worrying. I was hoping Kyle was going to freak out since we just brought him on.
I did pee myself a little bit.
That's good. Do you have pants on this week?
This week, the pants are currently on, but okay. If this debate gets heated again, they will come off.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, fair enough. So, this week, obviously we have Mr. Kyle Vansel with me again. Unfortunately, Daryl was not able to join us since we are recording on Christmas Eve to try and squeeze in one last episode this year. But I managed to have another, I think, fairly prominent member of the card game DB community who was able to step up and join us, Mr. Steve Cantrell.
I don't know if I know that far to say prominent, Will, but
What's your post count on there? I bet your post count's higher than mine.
Oh, gosh, I don't know.
I
think I broke 1,000 recently, actually.
Okay, yeah, see, there. Then you're beating me. I have not broken 1,000. I think the last I looked was like 992 or something. So, you know, I realized, by the way, dear listeners, that when we brought Kyle on the show, we kind of did it blind. We brought him on as a guest, which was not too unusual. But then we decided we were going to let him stick around and I didn't have him introduce himself or anything. So, Kyle, why don't you give us a brief, say, under 5 minutes, please, introduction.
Oh, under five? I could do this under a minute.
Okay, good.
I used to really suck at Thrones, and then I didn't suck so much and became your friend, and now we're here.
Wow, you did do that very, very quickly. How
did
long
I lie?
Have you
Not
been playing now? I mean, it has to have been since, like, 06 or so, right?
Yeah, I know. I think it was 05 because I didn't know how to drive when I started playing this game.
Really? Wow.
Yeah.
Jeez,
I remember
that.
That's why I'm the
old.
That's why I'm the panda that rides, because I couldn't drive to the regionals.
I see.
Yeah, and I sucked for a long, long time, and then I came to Missouri and wasn't half bad at this game. And now, you know, it's a lot better. I learned that winning makes this way more enjoyable. Getting Sansa every week just doesn't quite, you know, tickle your giblets quite as much as winning does. So.
And everyone does love the giblet tickling.
I know. Yeah. I don't, there's nothing to respond to that with.
You know, there isn't, but I have a great segue. Steve, what tickles your giblets? Why don't you give us a little overview of yourself?
Well, sadly, my meta is about me, so there's no one around to tickle my giblet. I've been playing since the beginning of 2012, so about going on 2 years now. Started reading the books, and one day decided, you know what, I bet you there's a card game for this, because I'd played some card games previously, so I looked it up, and there was.
All right.
And that's how I got into Thrones.
I wonder how many people find the game that way. Yeah, I wonder how many people just think that, like, I wonder if there's a card game for this, and stumble into it.
I bet not a whole lot. I don't know, I'm thinking there are an awful lot of people that have read the books, or at this point have watched the show, that don't know these type of card games exist.
Sad.
I know, something needs to be done with that. FFG needs to pay HBO to have like a 30-second blurb for the card game at the end of like episode 1 of season 4.
Wow, that would be... think how many strange people would show up to World's End.
That would be prodigiously expensive. They will never do that.
I feel sad when I try and explain the game to people and I tell them it's like Magic the Gathering and they don't know what that is.
Yeah, I usually start with the description, it's like chess with cards, because most people know what chess is.
That's actually where we go. We go Magic and Chess had a baby and we ended up at Thrones.
Ooh, that's, you know, that's a good way to describe it too.
But if they don't know Magic or Chess, well then you are screwed.
They're up the creek.
Just stop talking to them.
Yeah,
you know, I was about to say that, like, if they don't know either of those, I'm like, I don't know how many friends I have that have never heard of either of those.
All right, so the reason we have this illustrious crew on the podcast this time, aside from the fact that Daryl's a wuss and ditched out on us to, like, hang out with a friend who was in town for Christmas or something, but also we have heard your cries, fair listeners, and we readily acknowledge that we did not do as good of a job representing the Berlitha, if you will, of Knights of the Hollow Hill as we could have. So this week we have Steve on, who I think takes a bit of a different approach to the matter at hand than dear Kyle does. I think I'm probably more in the middle ground here, so I may try to just kind of direct the flow of the conversation, but I'm sure I'll interject some on both sides. But here we are with a redo of the Ban, Errata, Restrict, or Leave It the Hell Alone, Knights of the Hollow Hill. Now, I jotted down a few questions to kind of help the conversation flow here and see what we can do. So, the first thing I kind of wanted to throw out for you guys here, we're just going to start at the top, okay? What do each of you guys feel is the biggest benefit of the Knights of the Hollow Hill agenda?
By benefit, do you mean which of the three things it provides?
You know, potentially. Like, I could see it being, for instance, one of those three resources it provides. It could just be the resources as a whole. I mean, in some way, like, some folks would say that freeing up your deck slots and not having to play, you know, some of those resource locations is a benefit. You know, there's some different ways to look at how it affects the deck construction that people have some different views on.
I would say it's the guarantee and how protected it is. The fact that you know that's what you're starting with, you know that those are going to be available to you every round, and currently outside of the Alliance agenda, I'm trying to think of a lot that hits your house card. So in that regard, they're very protected. So I think that, at its core, is probably what is its biggest strength.
So you're thinking that the stats as a whole package, not any one.
No, the fact that you can rely on them, that you have them from the start, no matter what, and that it's very hard for them to be taken away. Last week we talked about the equivalent of it in locations, but those locations can be blown up, they can be blanked, there's things that can happen to them, whereas if they're coming from the agenda, you don't have to worry about those ever being taken away.
Okay. Well, Steve, are you on about the same tack there? Or
Yeah, I would actually agree with what Kyle said. Just being able to count on that, not only that it will stick around the whole game, but that you can start with it from turn one, is just such a huge asset that you can rely on that influence mostly. Not so much the goal and initiative are important, of course, but the influence, I think, is the thing that's driving my opinion that it should probably be restricted.
Yeah, I think I'm not necessarily sold on which direction for sure right now, but I definitely feel that the biggest piece of the benefit that there, the biggest piece of that pie, is the influence benefit. With the gold, I think, a fairly close second, because there's a lot of borderline really terrible plots that become actually pretty good once you can add two gold across the board to them. Things like Bruno's favorite Waste Their Time, or my Target Knights of the Hollow Hill deck's been experimenting with running about three of the river plots that suddenly start looking a lot more bearable when they have that extra income.
Yeah, I've been trying some rivers a little bit in Lanny Hollow Hill too, and they're not bad.
I'm honestly kind of surprised at how well just a handful of them. I don't think I'd run the whole suite by any means, but like three or four of them gives you some nice options. But that's probably an entirely different discussion.
Probably.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we'll see here on the second question I had at the moment. What is the biggest drawback? Maybe we'll let Steve start on that one.
Well, really, the only drawback to the agenda is that you don't get a setup. There might be several subsections of how that's a drawback, but
yeah, that's probably kind of how I was looking at that. My jotted down quick question may not have been as clear as it should have been.
Well, you also have that you can't run any gold bonuses. So
that's right.
I mean, I've been playing around with Lanny Hollow Hill, and there are a lot of times where that kind of sucks. I mean, increased levies, the gold weenies. There's a lot of little things that you lose, or if you run a real gold heavy, some of the new gold heavy effects, you can't really rely on as dependently, because you're only going to ever have that plus two gold. As well as Ride a Lannister, you can see three, four, whatever ridiculous number you want to get up to.
Right. Well, and of course, there's the opportunity cost that's worth pointing out of not being able to run another agenda, which, I don't know, it's debatable whether that is, I don't know, a very big deal at the moment, because the other agendas, I think a lot of folks are feeling, are not competing for that slot as hard as they used to be. Say, you know, the Maester's Path, for instance, doesn't have the oomph that it used to.
Well, you also have all the cards that are turned on or off by an agenda. I don't think the opportunity cost necessarily lies in you running in another agenda, but the cards you can't run, like the Brigands or turning on their flank, I think you look at that kind of stuff as part of that drawback. Especially okay. With no agenda being so popular as we saw at Worlds and Gen Con and Stalag.
I honestly thought there would be more stuff that keep off not having an agenda or your opponent having an agenda. They didn't go quite as far as I thought they were going to.
Well, we do know there's a little bit more coming in the last chapter pack of this cycle, right? Way back when they very first put up the teaser article for this whole cycle, they previewed a plot,
right,
which I should have already
summoned
had
by the
in
Conclave.
Front of me. Yeah.
Yep.
Which I think may be a fairly strong draw to be not running an agenda. I don't know.
Yeah, I could see that in a few weeks when it comes out.
Okay. Well, As far as these drawbacks go, I mean, the setup one is probably the one that folks look at the most, right? And one thing that folks have really been talking about are all the cards that can kind of help mitigate that in one way or another, offset it, if you will. And that has been gradually increasing over the last couple of years. So which would you guys say is the, like, top card to do that? Or top couple cards, if you like.
I look at, to kind of keep the theme with the Hollow Hill, I've been experimenting with the two new rivers. I believe it's Befouled River, the one where you, whoever has the card's a command one, where the one who has the most has to ditch two. So unless it's a Hollow Hill mirror match, you're taking two cards away from them, which kind of negates the card cycling they get from a setup. Or Red Wine Straits, where you're now counting, what, 10 gold? So, I mean, even if you think most people open, if you open with a big gold plot, it's 5. Now you've got the 5 gold from setup, so you can catch right back up from where they were. So, those are the two that I find I open with a lot when I'm looking at Hollow Hill builds. But
okay.
Yeah, for me, it'd be the first person that's been around for a while. That's been the go-to, I think, until recently. I've seen Bungled Order's first turn, which really slows down the deck that isn't Hollow Hill. You've got to, you know, if you want to flood the board, you're going to run right into a Valar. Shadows and Spiders, especially out of Martell and Lenny, can really slow things down and let Hollow Hill catch back up. So all you have to do is negate that one challenge. Are you guys still there?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
I had just sent a message through the chat, not realizing that, not really thinking about it causing a noise on the computer.
Okay, no problem.
All right. So, some of those options have been around for a while, like, say, First Snow of Winter, right? And, of course,
Shadow
Bungled Orders. Well, yes, but I was going to say Bungled Orders has actually been around for quite a while at this point, before folks started using it with Knights of the Hollow Hill and some of the ways that it has been before. You know, like, I'm just kind of curious, what has tipped things kind of to the breaking point to start this outcry and discussion, you know? Because some of these options have been around for quite a while. The new options, I haven't really seen a whole lot of play with yet. You know, Knights of the Hollow Hill wasn't really, like, I mean, it had a very strong presence, but wasn't, say, the dominating presence at Worlds, for instance. So I'm just kind of curious, what's kicked this off? What brought it to this point?
Well, last year when Bruno won Worlds with his Targ Knights of the Hollow Hill deck, a lot of people felt that it was such a good deck because the amount of influence ambush characters and influence events that Targ had reached a critical mass where you could have enough of them for that to be a solid theme for the deck and it just be efficient. And I feel like that's what we're seeing with Knights of the Hollow Hill out of all of the houses right now, with a combination of the old and the new stuff, like Bungled Orders and Red Wine Straits together, Rally Cry. There's just this critical mass of control plots where you can slow the game down and catch back up very easily, despite not having a setup. Does that make sense?
Yeah. So it's just kind of the general stuff. You don't think there was any particular point that really kicked us over the edge? Was it the release of Rally Cry? Was it Greg playing this, you know, near characterless deck at Gen Con? Was there any specific point?
No, I don't think so. I wouldn't say that any card or one deck in particular is driving the discussion for why Knights of the Hollow Hill should or shouldn't be restricted.
Okay. Kyle, have you seen anything that led up... I mean, whether or not you agree with the discussion overall, did you see anything that kicked it off from where you were looking at things?
I don't know about kick it off. I think when you see... I mean, the last cycle, the only thing that was introduced mechanic-wise was cards at your command. And all of those cards are going to help Hollow Hill at its weakest, which is at its opening. So... I think you've just seen kind of what Steve's saying here, that there's just more, as a card pool grows and as there's more support, cards and ideas and themes that weren't necessarily viable a year ago become much more so.
Gotcha. Okay, so maybe that just means it's kind of an inevitable thing. Stuff will just always get better because of the interactions. But we saw, like Steve brought up, Bruno's build, right? That was all the rage for a little while after Worlds last year, and then dropped off going into regionals because of the FAQ, which actually restricted several other cards. And then it, you know, just kind of stayed down, I guess. Knights of the Hollow Hill in general, like what kept it suppressed? Was there anything going on in regionals that offset that, or was it just the FAQ update?
I felt that the regionals were kind of an aggro heyday a little bit. Saw a lot of really beefy builds. I didn't see a lot of burn. So I think having decks that could flood the board so quickly and do it with such quality characters kind of dissuaded people. That and people normally, I've noticed there's usually a very strong reaction to FAQ updates. So people see all these control cards get restricted, specifically burn cards get restricted, and so they jump off the burn bandwagon, and people's like, oh, well, obviously now you can't play it. And so I think there was some reactionary ideas to that.
Was there anything else available that was pushing
you also had
these aggro builds?
Well, House of Dreams and The Long Voyage both came out after Worlds, before Regionals last year, so people wanted to try the new thing.
Plus, negotiations were still, you know, legit.
True. Tunnels of the Red Keep was keeping burn down some, so you didn't see as much Hollow for that reason.
Well, I've seen I was hoping to prompt a deeper jump into this with those questions, but I've seen The Long Voyage and negotiations at the Great Sept brought up quite a bit in the thread that first brought this to my attention, which was Drakey's rant. Do you guys think that those were really what was helping push aggro up there and keep it up there? I mean, was TLV really a predominantly aggro agenda? Was negotiations, or is it, I guess, for both of those? Are they aggro cards? I'm kind of curious where that perception comes from and if that's accurate.
I think negotiations is very, very flexible, and I struggle to think of a deck where you wouldn't want a two-claim plot that lets you refresh your hand. Just it can bail you out of so many situations. It can let you play things in a totally different way, and there are a lot of rounds that would go differently knowing you can draw back up at the end of it. So I thought aggro definitely benefited the most from it. Being able to flood the board and then refresh, you know, helped a ton, especially against something like Hollow Hill. It's like, you can Valor and blow it, that's fine. I'm just going to negotiate and do it all over again, and now you're screwed. And so no longer fearing that, I think you can – Hollow Hill decks, there's very little other than like a fear of winner that really you have to worry about truly screwing you over.
And I feel like the intent behind both of those cards might have been to help aggro a little bit, but they almost ended up just ending up in every deck.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was thinking about. Like the Martell TLV that I played at Regionals was, I feel – pretty much a control deck. It just had 85 cards instead of 60. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, and I think part of the reason why they're restricted is because they were very universal in their benefit and flexibility. But I still think that they made – well, a lot of different builds and archetypes benefited. I think aggro really shined using them and found the most effective ways to use them to their fullest potential.
I think I'd probably say that about negotiations more so than TLV.
Yes.
Because you know, the standard control deck, and Knights of the Hollow Hill in particular, really wants to hoard the stuff in their hand and carefully craft what they have, you know, available, especially when they've got, you know, these influence effects that they need to use at the proper time. And so they are much less likely to trade in their hand and get something else, unless the game's already going pretty terribly for them. So I feel like that was the bigger aggro push to me. I know I definitely had a rush deck that took a solid blow when it lost negotiations and had to keep the conclaves.
Definitely. I mean, it was a great plot, super powerful plot. I also think it's way more balanced. I'd rather see that. This is going to be a tangent. I'd rather see that drop to one claim and not be restricted than to see it be restricted. I think it's a cool mechanic for the meta, and I wish it was back.
Yeah, that's kind of an offshoot of the discussion from what I had been reading on the site there that I found really interesting. You know, I kept thinking about those cards that they said had been pushing aggro, and I kept wondering if negotiations or TLV then, if something should be done to bring them back up rather than knocking Knights of the Hollow Hill itself down. I didn't know if that thought had some merit.
Well, I think in a vacuum, the Hollow Hill agenda is very well balanced. It's well made. I think it does all the things you want it to do, and it kind of the vision you have for a deck, it does a nice job of supporting that without putting you in a box. I love it as a card. So the next question becomes, what has changed? Well, the agenda hasn't changed, and from the talk here, the cards and especially plots that you run out of it necessarily hasn't changed all that much. So the only thing that could have changed is the meta around it. So you look at, you know, what kind of decks do Hollow Hill decks fear? What kind of things screw over the Hollow Hill deck? And why are those either not present, not being ran, or restricted? And if you look at that, you start to see why Hollow Hill is doing so well.
And it's kind of tough because it's not really a Knights of the Hollow Hill deck, right? It's several decks out of several houses now. It's spread out.
Almost every house except Stark, really.
Yeah, I'm sitting here trying to think of influence-based Stark effects, and I'm coming up with remarkably little in my head. okay, so here's just following down that road. We've already seen another card that I think was in a fairly similar situation, and that was the Laughing Storm, right? Who was not himself completely degenerate, though I wasn't a fan of it conceptually, but that's a different discussion. Who has been on and then off the restricted list? It is a champ card, and it had some pretty awkward and, you might say, overpowered interactions with other cards. And, you know, once it at first was put on the restricted list to avoid that interaction with a couple others, it came back off. It caused some other interactions with different things. It caused erratas to be made to other cards rather than the one that was more central to that issue. I mean, does that set a precedent that FFG would rather kind of keep the champ cards off and fiddle with several other cards? You know, same sort of thing. Maybe even after Bruno's deck when we saw, what, like three cards from his deck enter the restricted list, was it? Yep. Afterward, rather than something happening to Knights of the Hollow Hill.
I don't think they're going to... Go ahead, Steve.
If FFG were to restrict, you know, Favorable Grounds and or Westeros Bleeds or something else that hits a lot of Hollow Hill decks, I think that would help the meta to bring aggro back into the picture and make it so, you know, you can flood the board once in a while and not have to fear reset every turn. But that would be the second best option, in my opinion, after restricting Hollow Hill, which provides the influence that they need in the first place.
See, but, I don't know. I just think restricting Hollow Hill is going to do kind of what I thought restricting TLS did the first time. I mean, when TLS went on that list, I feel like Barra just dropped off a cliff, and we did not see Barra play at all for a long time after that.
Is that as likely to happen in this situation where it's several house, where it's spread out over several houses, though?
I don't know. I think there's a lot of builds that become far less viable. I think I'd have to just assume that Lanny Hollow Hill is never going to be tier one if I have to give up either the Castellan or the cash for it. I think out of some other houses, you start to have some really, really difficult choices where some other agendas start to become better ways to go with them. I think it would hurt. I think it would hurt a lot. I do think the better play is to go, like, maybe restricting bleeds, because I think there are some really cool, different decks out of Hollow Hill. Not all tier one, but all very different and kind of unique and cool. But I think part of the negative play experience and part of what's so oppressive is all the resets. If you take that away, you still keep a lot of what's good about Hollow Hill, and I think you could maybe curb some of the power and most powerful effects that are slowing down the game.
Okay. Well, on the flip side there, Steve, do you think restricting Knights to Hollow Hill is going to kill some of these unique builds in the various houses? Do you think it would open up more?
I think that restricting Hollow Hill would actually hurt Martell, Barra, and Lanny a lot more than Targ, because Targ would probably strict with Hollow Hill as their restricted card. But the other three decks, I don't know if they could withstand that. Barra losing negotiations or the Bannermen, and Martell losing probably running on the sands or the Bannermen. Targ would lose Hatchling's Feast, but I think they'd still be fine.
Which is tough. I mean, that's one of their resets, so to speak. I mean, combined, of course.
But it's not a terminal effect. I think Targ withstands it. But like I said, I don't think any of these decks are going to be anyone's going to feel good enough to start running them in a tournament anymore.
Mm-hmm. So I'm kind of curious, and this is probably the last of my organized questions that hasn't really been brought up in one way or another. You know, the really dominant deck type wasn't Knights of the Hollow Hill in the last, like, three tournaments we had. It may have been the last three large ones. It definitely won in Stalic. It placed well at Worlds. And was the most represented agenda, like, in the cuts and stuff, but it doesn't feel like it had that, and maybe that's just me, it just doesn't feel like it had that kind of Maester oppression, or like at the end of regional season, if you guys were paying attention when we were going over the regional stats, and you had, like, what was it, 3/4 of the field was TLV or something like that, and then you had, like, 2/3 better chances to make the cut if you played TLV than if you played something else. It just doesn't seem like it's at that point. So maybe just a philosophical question on my end, like, what prompts people to see a need in something? Like, where's the breaking point? Is it just, like, perception, or are we basing it just on, should we always just look at whatever the most popular agenda is?
Did you get a chance to compile the Stalic stats?
You know, honestly, I meant to tonight, and then I got distracted looking through cards and talking decks off and on with Aaron Glazer.
Okay.
So, yes, I should have done that so we could get a picture of the overall field of Stalic instead of just the cut.
Yeah, because just out of the decks that were published online from Stalic, I saw 7 Hollow Hill decks in the top 32, which is a pretty hefty number. So I think a lot of the push to restrict Hollow Hill or just knock it down a peg is that it's been consistently making the cut a large percentage of the time, not TLV percentage, but 20, 30, 40% of the time for the last year and a half now.
Okay.
But we also talk about how you're seeing it out of a lot of different houses. So I struggle necessarily to restrict things when it's not like the same. Not like Bruno's deck was going, you know, and it was taking 7 spots, or we were seeing the same thing over and over and over again. I think I'd be more in favor of restricting it. But because it's a champ card and because I feel like the way to correct it is just to maybe tweak some things in the meta, not necessarily it. I just don't feel like the issue lies with the agenda itself and that it needs restricted.
Well, that pretty well covers, like I said, the questions that I had. But I know Steve was kind of making some notes, and I'm betting we've kind of meandered through some different things. And he probably has some stuff that we have not hit on yet.
Well, you mentioned briefly before that Knights of the Hollow Hill, because it provides the gold and influence, and because you don't have a setup, it affects your deck building. So you don't have to include as many resources, maybe, and you don't have to worry about having cards that are bad on setup, like attachments and events. You can include as many as you want, and that's how you end up with a deck with 5 characters in it. I just think that's a pretty big advantage to it, that's gotten even better lately with things like Desperate Measures and Support of the Smith, where you can really build an engine to do something like Greg did, and like these other decks with that aren't necessarily Tier 1, but they have ideas like that could easily become Tier 1 with using stuff like Nightmares in the North to mill the opponent's deck. I don't know if you've seen that.
I've not played against it, but off and on I've heard about people doing some stuff with it. Is it becoming a bigger thing online at the moment?
A month or two ago, there were a couple decks popping up that were having pretty good results, apparently. I'm just thinking, when you can have 20, 30 events in a deck, you're playing a different game. And that's especially what Martell and Targ Hollow Hill do. They can, you know, Targ can jump stuff in. They can avoid, you know, paying military claim. Just all these efficient things that they know going in, they have this advantage. But the opponent's deck still has to game plan for a normal deck and Hollow Hill, and you're torn in 2 separate directions there.
Well, of course, I mean, there's something to be said. The deck building is different in Knights of the Hollow Hill. But, you know, conversely, the other decks have a different deck building as well, where they can play 2 setup, you know. They may be 5 cards deeper into their deck and be up, you know, cards and up to that 5 gold they spent on setup there in initial resources. You know, is that enough? Like, are there just not enough ways to capitalize on that right now? You know, how long does it take Knights of Hollow Hill to catch back up on that deficit?
Let me throw this out there. What deck would you favor in a Noble Cause versus Targ Hollow Hill matchup? What would you expect the matchup to be like there?
I'm probably going to give the edge to Knights of Hollow Hill on that one, partly because of the eventual card advantage, and Targ Knights of Hollow Hill tends to try and find a way to grind the game to a standstill, which gives them an easier time to catch up against Noble Cause than your average deck, since it's drawing one less. But in particular, the specific construction of Noble Cause right now seems to be pushing people towards cheaper, weenie-ish type characters, which are easier for Targ to deal with in general.
Yeah, so I've been playing Noble Cause a good bit. Sorry, go ahead, Kyle.
Oh, you're fine. I was just going to say, but I've also seen some really awesome Holy Ashai builds that I think would eat Hollow Hill alive. So,
see, that's what I expected. But I've played, let's see, 6 matches versus Hollow Hill out of, you know, various houses, and gone 3-3 with my Noble Cause.
Okay.
I would expect
so batting
the Noble
500,
Cause
that's not
to be able
terrible.
To run all over it. Because Hollow Hill decks don't have a setup. You're ahead already, and the game is ideally going to last 2 rounds at most, with the Power of Fate both times, or at least one of those 2 turns, and Hollow Hill can drag it out pretty easily.
Well, there's things you can do to counter that. I mean, in mine, I ran Art of Seduction, which I thought worked out really well against the Hollow Hill decks.
The problem with Art of Seduction against Hollow Hill is that you can end up pinning either Bungled Orders or First Snow of Winter, which is not fun.
Yeah. Well, okay, maybe that's one other point worth looking at here before we move on. Are there counters available? Are they, you know, effective? Are there just not enough of them right now? Of course, that's one option. I think Burning Bridges is a solid option against some of their options. Of course, it's not going to stop a Westeros Bleeds. I've been looking an awful lot lately at Attack from the Sea, because I really think it hits a lot of stuff. Of course, you know, any of these decks using Hatchling's Feast or Westeros Bleeds or what have you are going to need some extra influence to go with the House Guard. They can't do it on their own. And if you kneel it all out, or you kneel out, you know, Aegon's Hill, Lanny Iron Throne, you know, there's a million different control locations that are being played right now. I don't know.
That's just not a bad idea, actually.
I'm surprised we don't see Fear of Winter more, especially with Hollow Hill being so prominent. They've obviously, I don't know a lot of Hollow Hill decks that still run Forgotten Plans. So, and I've always thought that plot was it's wonderful for control, don't get me wrong. But even out of aggro, especially as an opener, I mean, yeah, they start with like Bungled Orders or something, but if you drop that, I think it changes the game a lot. Or even if you hold back a little bit, and then I think they have in the bag, and to drop that plot can just ruin a Hollow Hill day. And it's so strong, and I prefer restricted plot cards versus restricted in-deck cards. And so I think, like I said, I think it'll be interesting to see how the meta reacts. Because obviously now we're all aware of how viable Hollow Hill is out of various houses and the tricks and the cool things they do. So it'll be interesting to see if the pendulum swings back the other way as people start to tech for it a little bit, in just little tiny ways, and if that can create, like I said, I think the problem's with the meta right now, not with the card. So as we get new cards, as people are aware of it, how that meta changes.
You know, I do have to say, as much as I hate Fear of Winter for a variety of reasons, that is a really good point that it locks in that setup advantage that you've got in those early turns, and keeps Knights of the Hollow Hill on their heels as far as trying to make up that advantage. So, I don't know. Well, it was maybe not as spirited of a discussion without Daryl here, but did you guys have any parting thoughts? Anything pretty pertinent that we've missed?
If anything happened to it, I would like to see it errated before restricted.
Really? What kind of errata would you slap on there?
Probably just drop the influence down to 1. Make it harder to drop the 4 influence events that people really seem to have a problem with. The Prince's Plans and the Westeros Bleeds. You have to work for it a little harder. I think it'll even things out. I think that'd be a decent change. Like I said, I believe it's fine and that the meta will correct to it and everything will be okay. But if I had to, someone like put a gun to my head, I would drop the influence 1 and call it a day.
That would actually be a good solution, but it would just burn my eyes looking at the card knowing that that says 2.
Yeah, they'd have to do a reprint.
I do hate that. But hey, we've had non-unique brothels and Khal Drogo's tents for quite a while.
Yeah. There's always something. Septas with no traits.
It's just not quite the same as changing a big bold and number, but I do think that would be a fair solution.
Yeah, I think so as well. If something absolutely had to be done, I like that one fairly well. It still keeps the spirit of the agenda pretty well intact, but backs it off just that one notch.
Because there's still a lot of one-influence events, like Walk of Shame, things like that, that are still fine and you can count on no matter what.
Interestingly, it would still keep things fairly nice for some of the non-influence houses here, in quotes, like the Baradex that only need to get up to 3 for some of their effects would have an easier time. Lanny that's just needing one influence for something like that, rather than, you know, the more stereotypical, say, Martell build that wants to get up to 4 for Prince's Plans and Westeros Bleeds. So, just interesting.
Calling my shot now, when it happens. You heard it here first. Two champs, one chump.
Alright. Well, we've got another segment we want to hit on here, since this is the last episode of 2013, and we'll be coming out very close to Christmas, unfortunately a couple days afterward. But still, we thought we'd look back through the sands of time here at the past year and fill out our own little naughty or nice list and see who or what is going to be getting some presents. So I think we've got a variety of categories here. We've all got some answers dreamed up. And we'll just kind of give a little rundown at what's happened lately. So I think first up, let's start at the card level. I'm going to do this a little out of order from, how I had first sent this to you guys. So I hope that doesn't throw you off too much. Okay. I'm going to roll with, to begin with, the best new Jaime card this year.
Well, Kyle. For me, it's Jaime.
There we go.
Yeah.
Wasn't Kyle, but it'll work. That's what I get for leaving that empty spot to let someone talk before I decided. No, it's fine. That was my bad. I think Jaime's a good choice. There's a lot to be said for that neutral draw.
Card advantage wins games.
Yeah, draw really does equal win. And I don't know who says that, but someone truly believes it out there. And I think, he shows, and it's repetitive, and it's consistent, and you get a renowned dude with it. I mean, what more can you want?
And it works off your opponent's shadows, too.
Yeah.
Anytime your opponent benefit from something your opponent does, and you can dissuade them from their game plan, it's so huge. It's casual disruption, and it's nothing but good. There's no drawback to them. None.
And with the right build or board space yourself, you know, you could be draw capping off of one trigger, which is pretty crazy.
Well, I mean, look at like a house like Lannister that doesn't have a lot of renown. I mean, him alone, he's a renowned dude, military intrigue, and worst case, you draw one card off him just from himself. Like, that's great. If you just told me there was a dude out there that when he came into play, I drew a card and he had renown and equal cost to strength ratio by con, I'm like, I'll stick him in. No problem. Yeah.
You know, now that you've got me thinking about that, you know, I'm thinking kind of the standard, like, Bera dude is the 4 cost, 3 strength, by con, renown, right? And if they had one of those that just straight up just said, like, draw a card when you play him, I'm sitting here thinking about it and I'm like, I think that would be really good for some kind of aggro or rushy deck, you know? And that's Jaime right there.
He's great in everything.
Yeah. Okay. Well, Kyle, who was your best new Jaime card?
Jaime.
Also Jaime. All right. How weird.
It's all right there. The Jaime card, Jaime, wham, bam, yeah. Thank you, ma'am.
Well, I'm going to go out on a limb here with a different answer. I threw down Mr. Cold Hands, who is like the point-and-click answer to damn near everything. I mean, you spend two
gold. Yeah, he was a close second.
Yeah, like, you spend two gold, you knock out any character-based attachments, you knock out power, you knock out gold counters. Like, at the very least, that's what he does. More than that, maybe he drops, you know, a Lannisport Moneylender out of play on your side, and I don't know what's a good example. The War Host in the North on the other side. Okay, that's a terrible example. No one should be playing that card. But you get the idea.
I haven't pulled the trick yet where you remove one of your good characters before a Valar, but
yeah,
that sounds fun.
It's totally possible there. You know?
It's got all kinds of utility. I think it's one thing I've said on the show that I believe in is the more versatile a card, the better. And Cold Hands can be used in so many cool, different, creative ways. How can he not be super powerful?
Well, and he scales in melee too, right? You know, and melee is such a... I mean, the game, obviously, you already win off of power, but melee is power-focused. And the ability to just wipe, you know, three opposing characters of power, he's going to change melee.
Well, to pick up, like, bitchy or red-headed Mel... that makes your power on characters count, just be like, you know what? That's gone. That can change games.
Mm-hmm.
And to think of, I don't know a melee deck that's not going to run him, so to know that there are potentially four out there, melee is going to get ridiculous.
Yeah, it's going to be really awkward. Oh, man.
That's
we're going to time. Yeah. Okay, well, here we go. Best new Shaga card. This time I am actually going to straight up lead with Steve.
Okay. I had a couple, so it's tough to decide here, but I'm going to go with the Brand Stark that has the ugly coat on. The new winter one.
Really? Okay. All right. Tell me why.
Well, I've tried him a couple times, and he is definitely a Shaga card, not a Jamie card. That list of restrictions there is... super long, but
long.
when you pull it off, it's something else. When he clicks it, it is a sight to behold.
All right, Kyle, what do you have?
I have the Dothraki Vanguard down.
Ooh, that's not a bad choice.
I love combo decks, and any time that your opponent, when you're done with marshalling or you're getting ready to challenge whoever asks you how all of that stuff got on the board, makes me feel funny inside. And I feel like that's what being Shaga is all about. So I try to think about, especially that, look at that silly Dothraki deck that's around right now where just pukes out dudes, what one really makes things the silliest, and I think it's Vanguard, and just be able to sit there and go from zero to hero so fast and to flood the board like that. It is super cool, and so that was my, you know, I thought it was an easy pick.
Yeah, I mean, Shagas love big shiny things, and what's shinier than a gigantic army?
Truth.
Two gigantic armies.
Ah!
Yep, and you get them.
You win. All right, my choice is Desperate Measures. I think that card has just enabled so many just wacky things from the Martell decks that wanted to completely mill themselves out to combo, to the Baratheon Recursion decks that want to dump part of their board in, to Targ decks with Danny's Chambers that want to dump a bunch of attachments and start recurring them, anything like that. I could even see it, heck, in like an old school Queen of Thorns Shadows combo deck, just so I can dig for pieces fast. Like, it helps you put together exactly what you need ASAP. Like, it's not flashy compared to a lot of other stuff, but it makes combo decks run. So that's my choice.
Very good with that. All right. Anything that enables silly combos, you know, I'm all for. Great card.
So Kyle, why don't you nail your Ned on us?
I said a Gret for my Ned card because I was looking at cards and I was like, what truly represents what they do? And Ygritte takes our lovable Jon Snow and takes him on a worthless adventure through the North that was horrible to read and just a bad watch. If it wasn't for that sex scene, I could have just skipped the whole damn thing.
Dude, but just think of what that earned you in the TV show, though. I got to see that maid from Downton Abbey's boobs.
I'm so glad that's what made you excited. Was you're that maid, and now you're naked.
Yeah, yeah.
I guess it's a little less traumatizing than when we saw Tonks from Harry Potter seducing Theon.
That was so bizarre.
Very strange. I was like, there's no wands hidden here. But not important.
What episode is that in? Remind me to skip it.
I don't know when that is.
Fairly early.
Yeah, it's whenever Bran's getting out of Winterfell. But
okay.
But I thought the card, I mean, other than instead of Night's Watch just saying Jon Snow, I mean, pretty much lays out her role in the book's card. I think it's a really good translation. I'm sure tons of people who love to build decks like that just squeal with joy. And I couldn't be farther from a Ned player, but I assume this is the kind of card that they love.
Yeah, I think you're pretty close there.
And it might actually be good. You know, it's actually a good Ned card.
I think I'll see a lot of play.
Well, I'm sure in the decks they build it will not be good, but theoretically, I think it's actually a good card. In your like Wildling Night's Watch adventure with Jon Snow deck, it's probably terrible, but I think there are decks there. Some trait manip, maybe this helps put Lane trait manip back in the like contender category.
It very well might.
And this new Night's Watch stuff, so you might actually start seeing some Night's Watch decks. I mean, wham bam, it's right there. And neutrals, I'll take your Jaime, I'll just take Jaime.
Or Cold Hands.
Doesn't
really do a whole lot for you, but.
Well, now he's yours.
Guess you can kill him.
Restraint, power out on.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think I'd rather have Jaime, but.
For sure.
Still, I think it's very good. And with a bunch of new neutral stuff that's pretty solid, I think she'll see a lot of play, and she's good.
All right, so Steve, what'd you have? Oh, me? I'll throw mine out there. Yeah. I actually had Mr. Bran Stark, the one that you were just talking about.
Ah.
Yeah, like that ability is so deadly, it really gets across that warging, you know, you jump in and you take over a big beefy character like, say, Hodor, and you make it do Bran's work for you. And, best of all, thanks to all those restrictions, it's pretty much worthless, just like Bran Stark. And I really can't think of anything more Nedly than that.
He could have been so good.
That's a fair point.
It's like pinch of powder. I'm like, if you didn't just like shackle me at every limb,
yeah,
you might be worth a damn. You're so close.
I forget pinch of powder exists.
Everyone does besides Luke Reed.
Yeah, Bran Stark is one of those cards. It's one of those cards with a paragraph of text, so you skip to the end and read that first, and you're like, whoa, awesome. But then you have to read the rest of the text.
And then you get sad, and you put him in your binder and forget about it. I mean, I think he's still, there's got to be something there. I think he can work, but I just worry it'll take too much dedication to make him go off that you're not left with a good deck. But maybe. I'm open to anything. Anything.
Okay. Well, that hits the more specific card categories, unless... Wait, no. We were about to skip over Steve.
My net card was Northland Keep. Starks aren't having any shenanigans.
Oh my goodness, I've got to do a search here. I don't remember now what that does.
Yeah, I actually just pulled up... the search. It's like Northland.
It removes a character with higher strength and printed cost.
Okay. Alright. So tell me the Nedliness here.
Well, I don't know. It was off the cuff, but all those strength buffs aren't happening in the North.
Okay. Alright. All that cold winterness keeps people down. Keeps those southerners down below the neck.
Yeah, if you're efficient, you stay the hell out of the North.
Exactly.
Okay. Well, let's widen our view a little bit here. Out of the new cards that we had this year, who would be on your nice list? All right, I'll throw mine out there. I'm going to go with Dale Seaworth. It's just a sweet ability. I love comes into play stuff. I love leaves play stuff. It's a boost to Baratheon, who at the time we were all convinced still really needed a push. Recursion's one of my favorite things. Like, Dale's just cool across the board.
Yeah, anytime you can trigger three seat of powers, it's a good time, right?
Mm-hmm. Sometimes the same turn.
Now that's just
you couldn't do three in one turn.
I can't think of a bear deck that doesn't use DLC word.
If not for that interaction alone.
Exactly. All right, Steve.
My nice card was Tywin Lannister. Because he's good and doesn't suck like all the other ones.
You know, after how awesome Tywin was back in the CCG days, after like Uber Tywin with his, you know, no one stands and standing kind of like rock the house ability, and badass artwork, like we just had some letdowns in the Tywin category, and this one is the first one I actually believe might make some deck cuts.
Yeah, he's actually okay in some decks. He's still not really what I want out of a Tywin, but he's a whole lot better than what we had.
True. He almost makes me want to play Clansmen. Almost.
I wouldn't go that far.
Yeah, that's probably...
But relatively speaking, he's looking pretty good.
Yeah, I've had some games where he's really rocked the house. I'm like, wow, you're actually, you know, a good addition. Normally I regret it. I always put a Tywin in. I'm like, you're going to be fine. You're going to be great. You're going to do your thing. And then there's horrible regrets. And I'm like, why? Why did I ever do this? So to get one that I actually feel okay about, it's pretty nice.
Okay. Kyle, what was yours?
Oh, yeah. My nice new card. I feel like a little... I look at my list. I got a lot of shadows on here. I don't know what that says about me, but I put Preston down. He's just this little, like, world beater, just like this little guy. He's two strength, has a little ability, but he's so quirky and useful and does all kinds of little roles, and just, I love cards like that. This little two cost, two strength bicon, popping in and out. You can use him to win Dom, you can use him to dodge Valor, you can use him to trigger Jamie, trigger your shadows effects. He's a knight, like, he's just all around kick ass, and, you know, I just love seeing cards like that. That are super efficient and super reliable and versatile without being, you know, this awe-inspiring four-cost monstrosity. So Preston's a champ. Way to go, Preston.
Yeah, he was in the running for me.
He's a hard man to kill.
Yeah.
Boy, howdy.
So, love him. He's my boy.
All right. Steve?
Are we on the next category?
Yeah,
what are we doing here?
He did. Jesus. My bad. Man, I'm lost. I've got too many cards in front of me here. I lost all track of which one we were on.
Do you literally have all the cards in front of you?
I mean, I like saved them into a deck, so to speak, on Card Game DB, just so I'd have them, have which ones I pulled. Okay, what about your new naughty card? Which one would be on the naughty list this year? Who is Santa giving coal to?
I said the new Ariane. I think
really?
She is super... Okay, I'm thinking naughty.
What'd she do to deserve that?
See, when you said naughty, I was thinking of cards that were like... I mean, well, yes. I mean, that artwork, she's giving you bedroom eyes all day. But just like, I mean, like dirty cards. Like cards do effects, and you're just like, oh, like that just... just like really screw you with your opponent. And I think I've seen her used in so many different ways and so many weird things. There's nothing quite like winning a Nish and flipping her into to the spears or into a Valor. Like, there's all kinds of cool, weird things you can do with her. And she's, like I said, just dirty. Like, I just want to, like, take you into a cheap hotel and have, never mind, some angry things. But, I mean, she is. She's the epitome of everything that is, like, that Martell, Sand Snake, Scheming, Sandy bullshit. Like, it's all right there, and she needs some coal.
All right. Well, mine. Well,
I also.
Oh, go ahead.
I also went with a sexy Martell lady, but for a different reason. I went with the Viper's Paramour, because that's just a horrible card.
Yeah.
That's a waste of cardboard right there.
If only she'd had a couple icons, or dare I say been a Tricon. I would play her if she was a Tricon.
You can say that about
I don't even know about that.
Really?
She's Man, pretty bad.
I think I'd play a one-drop Tricon in a heartbeat, but that's just me.
Yeah, I suppose for a Tricon, yeah.
I mean, like, you see ORP out there, so...
Yeah.
That ability is just going to come into play, like, once in 100 games.
Yeah. Silly allies.
I think everyone got real scared of Martell, and you're finally seeing the backlash from that in card design, where they're just so scared to give them anything that they almost make sure that everything is collared and shackled and can only be so good.
Yeah, I think that's really the case. Like, we saw that with Lannister. Like, it dominated the CCG for a while. And then when it switched over to the LCG, Lanny dominated for, like, the first 2 years. And then you look at, like, say, the Defenders cycle, and Lanny gets...
Nothing. You know,
diddly squat for an entire cycle.
Not a damn thing.
Mm-hmm.
My heart wept. I can only play one house competitively, to heart just wept.
Yep. Okay. Well, let's broaden it up even a little bit more from here. What was your body card,
Will?
Oh, mine? Man, I am just skipping over stuff, probably because I tried to talk over you earlier. That would definitely be Cold Hands for me. I think he is going to warp the game in a way that I'm not sure I approve of. Don't get me wrong, Zyler's my bro. He kind of got screwed on Arrogant Contender, who, by the way, can't defend against that Paramore. I don't really think I like where Cold Hands takes things. Like, you can't play any sort of Voltron build anymore with Cold Hands around. I mean, he just creams Maesters. Like, maybe we can take some kind of Maester stuff off the restricted list now with Cold Hands around. It's gonna warp melee like we were talking about earlier.
I think he's almost an instant melee restriction. Almost instant.
Yeah, he probably ought to be.
I don't even want to, like, play in that world for a little bit. Like, that pool, the water is way too cold.
I can feel
you might be safe
right now.
If you go with a Martell Lanny Alliance deck and have three, he calls it Thinking, and three Iron Thrones, but that's about the only way.
Right.
I agree with you. I don't think he's... I think it's cool. I understand where the idea came from and where they were going with it. I just think it's going to be the point and click. It's like you said, I love Voltron decks. I think they do cool things for the game. And they're nice curveballs, and I'd love to root for them. And you can't take one to any decent-sized tournament now. I just feel like...
Nope.
Yeah,
you're asking
one card
for loss.
Just ruins your day. And granted, they're probably only running one-ofs, and they have to draw them, but... Still, I mean, a one card answer that's a silver bullet, that's rough.
Yep. Well, it's, I think we're good to widen it out even one more from here, right? Let's, what about just overall, Steve? What card made it on your nice list out of the whole pool this year?
That would be the Shadows Tyrion Lannister.
Ooh, really? Taking it old school. I like where you're going.
He is my closer. That guy just comes in the ninth inning and gets me 5 power and wins the game.
Yeah, with Kingdom of Shadows and such?
Oh, yeah. Gets renown or immune to events, whatever I need.
Yeah.
He can wait in Shadows all game long, right till the end.
With all the new Shadows stuff, it's so easy to trigger him.
Yeah, I can't imagine. I don't know the last time I built a Lannister deck that didn't have a copy of him in, like, the early, just, like, when you're putting a Corvette together. Like, he has to be in there. Even if he only turns off himself the one time, he's still super awesome. 5 strength Tricon. Nuts.
Yeah. All right, Kyle, what was yours?
My nice card. I put Wildling Spike down as mine.
Wilding Spike. I'm not familiar with that card.
Wilding Spike, it's a one-cost attachment. You can put it on, I think, locations. I think just, let me pull it up
No, I'm trying to give you crap, Kyle.
Oh.
You think you have Climbing Spikes?
Yes.
Climbing Spikes! Ah, I'm the worst! You're going to have to edit this, because I suck, and everyone's going to be like, get that noob off the fucking podcast. He doesn't even know his spikes. Like, what is he doing?
It's like there's only one spike in the game to keep track of, Kyle.
Yeah, there is one spike. But I love it. I've been trying to play some of the new Wildling stuff, so I've been building Wildlings at different houses. And those decks are usually real aggro-based and don't have a lot of... I don't usually put a lot of control in them. But you look at that card, and that's so awesome. It's spot control. If you have two Wildlings out, which you pretty much always should, it's immune. Like, that's just super... It's super sweet for me, and it just gives you the control you need in a deck that doesn't really care about control, but it rounds out things so nicely, and it's super efficient. I love it. I love it. I just started playing it, and I'm like, wow, this card is amazing. I forgot how good this was. So that kind of figured I'd throw it old school, and that's where I went.
I like it.
Have you been playing the new Wildlings recently?
Some. I started. I've got a Laney Wildlings I'm working on because the new Janos guy, the Conspirator, is super good.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Him plus Enemy Informer. It's like every round you're going to kneel a dude.
And, dude, that sort of deck makes an old, long-time, just, like, cool personal favorite of mine card even better now. The Campfire Mime is just too perfect in that deck.
Yeah, so good. Well, and that new plot, I love that new, the initiative boost plot, I forget what it's called, Betrayal at the Wall.
Yeah.
Is so neat, and I love that idea as this just, you know, that functionality, that's all it is.
Mm-hmm.
And that leads into so many cool things. You could run cities, or all kinds of, some river plots even, some stuff that has, you're like, this would be great, but I need to win influence to trigger this.
You could be running an aggro deck and wait and see what the Knights of the Hollow Hill deck plays, and then change your plot to counter theirs.
Yeah, it's like, oh, I want to drop whatever because I think they're going to Valor here. Well, let's just see if they do. I mean, to know what your opponent drops and respond to it is a huge advantage. And, I mean, essentially almost does what Wheels Within Wheels is going to do, which has been spoiled.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it lets you... Okay, you don't necessarily get to reveal a new one, but you get to react to their plot, and I think that's half of the advantage there. And so getting to do that, I think Wildlings are super hot, super cool, and I look forward to playing with them.
Nice. Well, you know what's funny? I'm noticing a real theme here, because my card on my nice list also is in the Lannister camp here. That is the Lannister house card. I just kind of want to throw some props out there for my house, so to speak. We've been kind of, puttering around in the low to mid tier for a while. And, we definitely weren't looking good when Targ was looking really strong. And just, kind of treading water at best. But after Worlds this year, stuff like the Kingsguard floating around, like it is clear that Lanny is once again a force to be reckoned with, and I love that.
So, I do too.
All right. Well,
Lanny was my first house when I started playing. Power Behind the Throne looked like my kind of deck.
Not a bad place to start. Nice, straightforward way to earn some card advantage. Plus, it's the best house. IMO. All right. So we've got our naughty list here as well, and the card that I think just really tops my naughty list this year, probably gonna surprise some folks. It's A City Besieged. I think more and more, at least the way I play and think about the game and, you know, looking at how things went at Worlds and stuff, I think City Besieged is really what has pushed the resurgence of city plots so much again. Being able to have that on-spot location control, and it is what also really stifles a lot of House of Dreams builds. I know when House of Dreams came out, we were really concerned about that, the location, and wanted some ways to touch that. But, you know, now we have multiple plot-based ways to do it. And City Besieged, I think, is so simple and slots in with the others and can other city plots and can be copied. That's one I want to watch.
And it's got really good stats, especially for a city plot.
Yeah, it's that, got like the best stats. Yeah, it would be different if it was like a 2-0-1 or something, you know?
Yeah, because even if you're playing it, scenarios you're usually playing it, or it's one of your later plots. And so, I mean, if you're blowing up a 3-cost location and blowing up a zero-cost location for you, I mean, it's already a gold swing plus the power from those locations. If you're dropping like an empty coin mint versus, you know, a Iron Throne or something.
Yeah, I mean, that was pretty well my game plan at Worlds. Drop a coin mint, use it up, and then now I've got a location I can freely ditch to City Besieged.
So, yeah, those stats are brutal. I'd like to see some of that come down.
All right, well, what made your overall naughty list then, Kyle?
My naughty list for, like, I just went with the trashiest card that I want to be better, and there's a lot of those actually right now.
Oh, man.
Like, you could be so good, but you're not.
Tell me it's what I want it to be. Come on.
Yeah, and mine's, it's not, but it's, I went with the long plan.
Oh, shucks.
I just hate shadow events that you have to pay all this gold for, and then they have these not so good effects. I mean, you have to lose all three challenges. Not even not win, lose all three challenges, and then you get 3 power, but you're paying 3 gold for it.
That is a lot of gold.
Let me double
check.
Right. Yeah, but
yeah,
as one, like, I'm like, where was the thought on this? I'm like, lose a challenge, mate, like that would be good, because 3 gold for 3 power is really rough when you lost 3 challenges. So, I mean, even with revenge mechanic, I mean, I kind of get it there, but you've got better things you can do 3 gold with. Hell, the new Ariane, boom, there. That's a fucking way better way to spend 3 gold than on this event.
And also a Shadows card. Or heck, even if you want to earn some power, probably Ilaria might get you farther.
It's just not... I've never found a Shadows event that I feel warrants going in my deck. And this could have been something, and it's just absolutely not. It's so bad, and there's no redeeming qualities to it.
Mm-hmm. Well, maybe not none. Maybe I shouldn't agree too hard there, but I see where you're coming from.
It can sit in shadows to help your whatever count, to counteract Dragon Pit.
There you go.
There we go. There's your anti-Dragon Pit
tech. There's always an upside. All right, Steve, what do you have?
All right, for my naughty card, I picked the Sorrowful Man, because he's just mean. Rains on everybody's parade.
Yeah, it seems like I've been seeing some rants about him, like on the angry thread.
Well, lately he really kills Shadows characters, because when you bring out something like Jamie, that's usually your last 2 gold.
Right.
So all these awesome new Kingsguard characters, he's the counter.
Yeah, that's a good point right there. And conveniently,
that happened to me at Worlds.
You know who has 2 influence to pay for him?
Hollow Helidex.
Yep.
You know, he's super good, and I hate that. I don't like those effects that are like coming out of shadows that you can't cancel. Like playing a Lannister deck, I always want to Iron Throne him and just put him down, and I can't, and it hurts so bad. I'm like, you're so nasty. I just want to stop this. That's why I run the Iron Throne, and he just does his thing. Nothing you can do about it.
And then he sticks around for a while and he's deadly and you can't do anything about that either.
Oh, deadly on the power challenge. That's great.
Whoa.
Maybe not quite my absolute dream. That'd be intrigue, but still good.
Well, he killed a dude to come out, so, I mean, he's already done some work. That boy's trying.
And he didn't even have to use a trident.
Nope. He is sad about it.
Okay, let's take another another step out here. You see, you like how I'm fading out or up or something like that? All right, Let's take a look at decks. Just out of the last year here, what's the deck that just really, really you think did well, did nicely, really helped things out here, Steve? Who's on your nice list?
I went with Barra Hollow Hill, just because it was nice to see Barra have a good deck.
Yeah, for the first time since Zyler won in 11, I think.
I started using Barra Hollow Hill in like March or something, a few months before it got the last pieces, and I was like, oh, this is so close, and this deck is fun, and I like it, but it's not quite good enough yet. And then somebody won one Stalic with it, so props to them.
Yeah, it's crazy. Listeners of the podcast know I've been tinkering with similar builds, sans Knights of the Hollow Hill, off and on for a long time. And, going into Gen Con, or sorry, Worlds, I couldn't quite decide what to play. Some folks in the Sky group suggested to me, like, hey, why don't you dig that deck out? It's, you know, it's a lot better than it used to be. It's got some good options and stuff. And I opted not to do it. And then turns out Steve Simone does really well with it at Worlds. And then it goes and wins Stalic. And I apologize. I looked up your name last episode, sir. And now it completely lost me who actually won with it at Stalic. So, yeah.
Love it.
Who's up next?
I can go real quick if you want, and then I'm going to have to bail out.
All right. Go for it, Cal.
Nice deck. I put these Knight of Flower Voltron Laney decks, but really it's just Voltron decks in general, because I think they're great and they're ballsy, and to take one to a tournament and go, say, I'm going to go 5-6 rounds of Swiss and then a top cut, and I'm going to rely on one character to do it, takes a lot of stones, a lot of gonads, and I just think that it's a curveball and a lot of decks don't prepare for them. And to see you one like that do well, which was piloted by, I think I've seen a couple times, where it's pretty much just a Knight of the Shadows Knight of Flowers with a Devious Intentions on him. So you have this Tricon Madman that's just going to wreck your day. Or you see some other stuff like the King Viz decks that just throw attachments up real fast. I think all of them, Voltron Chaff, are all very cool, and I've seen a lot of them this season, with a lot of the card support now coming into place. And I loved it. I thought it made for a very a wide, varied tournament field, and it was good to see it.
That's good. You know, for as much longer as that lasts, i.e. Yeah. Until Cold Hands is available for our next large tourney, which he will be.
Yeah, like that was great, but it's over now. Maybe if they had added Cold Hands to be non-uniques, maybe.
Yeah, that might help some.
I think that still be powerful. I mean, take out a flank or a big, pretty much all the big armies are all non-unique, so that could be cool. Without
they could just
super...
make it neutral house only.
There we go.
Yeah,
I love it.
Boom.
Pretty soon, neutral house will have all the broken toys, and it'll just be absurdly good.
I don't know about that. But I think it would help. I think it would make it very... I think it would be viable. I think you start seeing it make a top cut here and there. Which would be good for it. I don't see why it shouldn't be able to succeed like that. No one should giggle when they see your house card at a tournament.
Shoot, there I went and just did it.
Yep. Alright, well, I am out. So thank you, Will, for everything. Steve, it was great talking to you. And
same
I will catch you,
Kyle.
In the new year.
Kyle, thanks for being with us here as long as you were able to, so we could squeeze in an episode here at the close of the year.
Anytime.
Merry Christmas, man.
Yeah, same to you guys.
Merry Christmas.
And see ya. Secret out.
All right. Well, I think Steve and I will go ahead and try and wrap up the very tail end of the episode here then.
Yeah, let's run through it.
Okay. Well, I've still got a deck on my nice list, and mine has got to be the Knights of Hollow Hill character list deck that Greg ran at Worlds, because, I mean, that's just hella cool. I love anything that just turns the game totally on its head and makes it so your opponents are playing a completely like different sort of interaction than you, and you can debate back and forth, I think, how good that is for the game overall, but I think it's still hella cool.
That just frustrates the hell out of me. I almost put that on my naughty list.
Yeah, I figure there's a good chance someone might do that.
Those decks that have five characters and make half your control cards useless, they make me want to cry.
Mm-hmm. Location, location, location.
Exactly.
As the insurance agents say, real estate agents. Hey, insurance agents probably say it some too, come to think of it. but yeah, that's what it's all about these days. Either having them or controlling them. So, what did make your naughty list then, if that one didn't actually make it?
Well, this was another Greyjoy deck, one that nobody likes ever and would not be sad to see leave the game.
Mill?
Greyjoy Choke.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it hurts, man.
When those Wintertime Marauders get going, that's naughty right there.
They are. You know, and there's nothing, like, in my mind, more demoralizing than just literally not being able to play any cards. Like, it's one thing if you play dudes and they get knelt, or you play guys and they die and then come back against you. Like, those suck, don't get me wrong. But it's another if you just literally look at your hand, look at the fact that you count no gold and have no locations and say, your go, and, like, don't do anything except draw two cards each turn. I don't know. Choke can suck.
Yeah, 10 cards in your hand and no gold is not a good spot to be in.
No, not in the least. Mine, I think, is actually going to be the Quentin character agenda decks.
Why is that?
You know, I don't think they're particularly bad for the game. It's just a personal grudge. It's just a personal vendetta here. Lannisters and Martells don't always see eye to eye. And let me tell you, when I'm playing a Lanny deck that's primarily using Neil as my form of control, all that Vengeful is just the most frustrating thing ever. So like at Worlds, like Kyle and I played a couple testing games before, Joust and stuff, and, you know, of course he was playing Quentin character agenda, I'm playing my Lanny Knights, and it was a very frustrating matchup, and then we get paired during the Swiss, and, man, I was glad that those were not as popular as they had been at Gen Con.
Yeah, Cersei's scheme at least helps a little bit there, where you can choose the order those passives happen in, I believe, but Vengeful's hard to stop once one's dead.
Mm-hmm. All right, I think that takes us all the way to the top here, then. What would be your nicest Game of Thrones memory from this year?
Well, this year was the first year that I played in any competitive tournaments.
Really? Nice.
Last year I got my feet wet a little bit playing in some small tournaments around here, but I'm playing on Octagon, but I made the trip to Worlds and had a blast, and watching Alvaro win with Lannister was definitely my nice memory for the year. Well, the Worlds experience, really, but watching that final match was pretty fun.
I mean, as far as times to get started traveling and getting into the, you know, that sort of competitive scene, it's hard to think of a better time, you know? Especially that sweet new event center and everything.
I'll definitely be back.
Good. Good man.
And if you're listening and you're on the fence about going to Worlds or Gen Con or anything, just do it.
Yeah, totally, totally worth it. Like, even if you're coming up like by yourself or something and you're afraid you won't know other people and whatnot, I mean, like there's nothing that makes friends faster than getting nerds together to talk about a card game.
I flew up by myself and it was a blast.
Glad you made it, man.
Thanks.
Well, mine, again, I guess is going to carry on with my personal vendetta here. Maybe not vendetta, but the theme. And that's going to be Lannister. I returned to the house of my youth and managed to make the top 16 at Worlds. I had been on quite a losing streak for the last few months. Like, I think maybe since Gen Con, I had not won a game, or at least it felt suspiciously close to that. And, you know, you do a podcast every week about the game, and, you know, you're talking about it and thinking about it and writing articles and stuff, and you just hit this dry spell and you're not winning anything. You really start kind of questioning your sanity and why you're doing this, and it's a really surreal sort of feeling. So I'm gonna say my nice list is making top 16 and kind of personally revalidating myself and being able to think, okay, you know what? I don't actually suck. This is a good feeling. Okay, maybe I suck, but that's for an entirely different reason.
Yeah, I didn't have the best results at Worlds, and when I got the bye the first round for having won a regional and then lost three straight, so it was nice to at least win the last two and get a little bit of validation there.
Yeah, that's good. It's weird, that kind of, I don't know, paradigm shift when something like that happens. You go in with a bye and then lose three or something. You feel pretty strange about it.
Yeah, winning's more fun.
Turns out it is. Well, does anything make your naughty list out of the year then? Or would that be?
Yeah, there's a thread that was my naughty list for the year.
Oh, a thread on CGDB?
Yeah, that was the thread where we had a discussion about what happens when a challenge by Hammerhorn Raiders is unopposed.
Oh, and my goodness.
What is twice of zero and all of that jazz?
Wow, that went round and round and round, didn't it?
For way too long.
Oh, yeah.
Now I'm bringing it up again.
I had almost forgotten about it. Thank you for re-scarring my psyche.
No problem, anytime.
Yeah, oh, that was crazy. I'm not going to name names, but I don't think at least one of those people would mind too much, even if I did. But, yeah, there was at least one person that I just kept reading his posts, and I'm like, you're saying the same thing each time. How many different ways can the rest of us explain what actually happens?
What gets me is that it's really easy to email FFG and get an answer in like 2 days max.
Yeah.
Instead of just spending half an hour posting in a thread speculating about what you think the answer is. So, that thread.
I mean, and it's like the way these sorts of things work in the game and the way we handle these numbers is already established. So, like, it's not like it was new territory for us. Oh.
Live and learn.
Yeah. Yeah, wow, thanks.
All right, so what was your naughty moment of the year?
You know, that actually makes a really, really good run for my money now that you've brought it back to my mind. You know, there's been a lot of stuff this year, but most of this year has been really good. I can't really point to any big controversies or anything, you know, that needs to be kind of looked at askew. And I think that's a good thing. So I think I'm just going to throw mine at Lady Luck. She is a fickle mistress. And you can have a really good run in a tournament, and then she just gives up on you completely, and you wind up with a game like my top 16 game against Bruno, and you can not initiate a challenge for 5 turns, which is the entire game. Yeah.
I did not know that.
Yeah, I mean, I give myself props, I guess, for making it 5 turns by the skin of my teeth. It was just me scrambling for any possible way to delay the inevitable and hope that something changed. And so, yeah, I did not initiate a single challenge. And I mentioned that dry spell after Worlds. I mean, Lady Luck can just be a bitch sometimes. So she is on my naughty list. All right.
On to the artwork.
Yeah, I think the one last thing, which kind of leave it for the end, since folks can't see it very well, so you may have to go grab your cards and really look at these. We also wanted to hit on our naughty and nice of artwork for this year, because, man, FFG's really cranked it up a notch, I think.
They have. This artwork lately is spectacular.
Yeah. I don't know what prompted that shift. I don't know if they just suddenly got, like, a big influx of sales and they thought they'd invest more in the art.
Maybe the technology's just gotten a little better.
Yeah, could be. I don't follow enough about, like, digital painting and stuff. Maybe there's been some advances there.
But for my nice artwork, I'm going to go with a card that I've been playing lately in a deck, and I looked at it closely, and there's some awesome detail there. And that is River Runner.
Well, really? Huh.
Yeah.
That was not even one that I had been looking at. I'm going to call that sucker up right now. Oh,
really need to maximize it as much as you can, but there's some nice scenery there. And you got the underdog River Runner out in a storm.
Yeah, cool effect with the, I assume that's the, like, the moon shining through the clouds there, or maybe some lightning.
I was going with lightning, but okay. Could be the moon.
Either or, yeah, that's some really cool lighting and stuff. Yeah, it's a nice piece. And I'm not sure who this Knitten is, or Knighten, whichever way that should be pronounced. Not a name I really remember seeing pop up on cards.
I haven't either. All right, what do you got, Will?
Mine is totally too suppressed in Greenfield. Again, it's a name that I'm not real familiar with. This Alexander Dainch, perhaps? But man, it just looks epic, you know? He's holding his sword there in front of him. He's got there's like a building crumbling around him or something, and these streamers of light coming down and illuminating him, like his cloaks flapping in the wind. Like, there's so much energy here. I can almost, like, I expect the John Woo doves to fly past him any moment now.
Yeah.
And, like, choirs of angels to start singing, which is hilarious considering how worthless Preston Greenfield is in the novels. But, man, he got some good art.
Yeah, you look at that picture and you almost expect, like, 8 strength or something.
Yeah, I know.
He's pretty badass.
All right, but, you know, not all of their art has really just hit it out of the park this year either. I think I've got at least one card on the naughty list for the art. I think I may allow myself to pick two.
Do you want to go first? Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Okay, I'm actually going to hit on three really quick. Two are related. The Noble Cause in the Old Way. It's a picture of a stag and a picture of the squid. And that is just so boring.
Yeah. They're just the house specific agendas, which is kind of strange, you know, that they went that way for those. Considering, you know, like the Lanny one got the daggers,
yeah,
Power Behind the Throne and stuff like that, and Siege got some swords, if I recall. I don't have it right in front of me.
I was also pretty disappointed with Robb Stark, actually, from Forgotten Fellowship. Yeah, he's just kind of chilling, standing around. I wanted to see him executing Rickard Parstark or something
awesome. Oh, that would have been cool. You know, I thought, like, the quality of the art was pretty sweet myself.
Oh, yeah, it was fine.
But, yeah, you're right. It's not very action-y or anything, really. He's just getting the wolf's wood, I guess. I'm not sure. There's some specks of red, but not really a full, like, red tree to make it a god's.
Yeah, it's hard
to say. Yeah. I don't know. It's all right. But not great. You said you had a third? You had
it.
Both agendas, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I do have to say, though, on the old way, I do kind of dig the watery background. And, you know, unless you're really thinking about it, you may miss them because it's kind of dark and stuff. But there are these tentacles kind of reaching up along the sides behind the stone kraken there.
They did at least get that, but I just feel silly sitting down with my Greyjoy house card next to the old way.
Yeah. Looks like you've just doubled up.
Yep. That could have been done better.
Well, my first one is going to be to one we've already brought up for a couple other categories, and that's Bran Stark, who looks terrifying. He looks possessed. You know, maybe this is supposed to be him when he's warged out, I assume, but just the art looks so creepy. Something feels off with the style. I don't know.
Yeah, it just doesn't fit with the rest of the artwork from the cycle.
Yeah, it really doesn't. It's a very different style there on that art.
Jarring, kind of.
Mm-hmm. And then the other one I would throw some slops out to is Willa Manderly, who actually, now that I'm looking at the date on her, I may have accidentally went one pack too far back in the Song of the Sea cycle, but regardless, I'm going to stick with Willa, because she has, now correct me if I'm wrong, but she has very green hair in this art, does she not?
Yeah, that was kind of strange.
I don't remember, you know, the exact description of her, but I feel like if I'd read anything about someone with green hair in George R. R. Martin's world, which has that, you know, grim and gritty, down-to-earth feel, I feel like I would remember someone with green hair.
Wikipedia is saying she has blonde hair, but she dyes it green and wears it in a braid.
Really?
Yep.
Well, bugger me with a sharp stick, then. Turns out she's supposed to have green hair. You win this round, FFG. You win this round. Fair enough, then. That pretty well covers everything for me. Any parting thoughts on 2013?
That was a good year. I'm looking forward to another Year of Thrones.
Yeah, I think the game is in a great place, by and large, here, and one of the most balanced between the houses that I've seen in a long time. Artwork's up. The cycles had tons of just cool stuff in it. So I just really dig where it is. And I think, and of course, we've had the biggest attendance we've ever had at Worlds. I think the future looks very bright.
Yeah, my only downside of this year was that a couple of my meta mates moved away, so if anyone's in the Atlanta area, we need some more players.
We'll see what we can do. I may actually know someone down there.
Yeah, I'm actually supposed to meet a guy that I never met before next week, so maybe we'll get something started.
Wow, is this like one of those Craigslist ad kind of things?
No, we've emailed a little bit, but I guess he just moved here and played Thrones, so.
Right on.
Maybe we'll start over again.
Well, I hope that works out, bro.
Thanks.
I should not say bro, I just felt way too, bro-ish, I guess, for having said that. That was very odd. Remind me not to do that anymore.
I just graduated college not too long ago, so bro is still part of my vocabulary.
Gotcha. It's perfectly acceptable then.
Oh, yeah.
Right on. Well, I think since we just did what amounted to really a very lengthy Thrones-related props and slops, I think unless you had anything you'd just been dying to throw out for props and slops, I think I may pass on that segment myself.
No, I'm pretty good. Just picked up a new game by FFG. It's not new, but it's the first time that I played it, called Citadels, and that's been fun.
Oh, yeah. That is actually real fun, especially for being a little Silver Lion game.
Yeah, it actually reminded me a little bit of Thrones in the way that you pick your characters almost like plots.
Oh, yeah. I can see that.
So that's been fun.
Yeah, I haven't dug that out in a long time. Thanks for reminding me. I'll have to figure out where I stashed my copy so I can play that again. Yeah, it's cool. And maybe I'll throw out one little prop to Anchorman, too. It was definitely pretty darn funny. It was not as bad as a sequel could have been.
I haven't been to the movies in a while.
Well, you should go see that then.
Maybe I will. Redbox isn't much of an option before I'll slop them.
Yeah.
They need some janky movies in there.
They do sometimes. And some old stuff sometimes. I don't know, their selection is very odd. But, well, there you have it, listeners. The last episode of 2013. If you still have some feedback for us, feel free to throw it our way before or after the end of the year. Particularly, let us know if we missed hitting on anything super important about Knights of the Hollow Hill, or if maybe we did a little bit better job of representing it this time around. You can reach us, of course, on facebook.com/2champs1chump. You can find us on Google Plus if you still use that. We've got the Twitter feed. You can email us 2champs1chump@gmail.com. And of course, the place where most people discuss stuff, the front page posts announcing each episode is up at generally midnight Eastern time on Fridays. So until next year,
Danger Zone!